Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to drhoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to drhoffman.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly edition of Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions that can be sent to radioprogram@AOL.com. And joining me today, as usual, my sidekick, Layla Mutin, Hoffman Center nutritionist, who is a podcaster in her own right. She recently joined the ranks of Intelligent Medicine Podcasts with her own offerings, which appear each Friday on drhoffman.com. And since your solo flight, Layla, I got to say I'm a little ticked off because I post these.
Why?
I got to admit. It's my ego. I'm working on it, but I post your podcasts, and to my delight, but a little bit to my dismay, your podcasts are going through the roof. And sometimes I post
you're
a
podcast. Really?
Seriously? Yeah. I mean, I know that you're not on Facebook. You're just not a Facebook kind of person.
Yeah.
But we post your podcasts on Facebook, and they are just going through the roof. Our people just really like your solo.
That's good news.
Your solo dissertations on various subjects.
We're both spreading the word.
Indeed. So I mean,
and I thank you for the platform.
It's a great platform, and it's an opportunity for you to weigh in on subjects that are nutritionally related. So, what was the subject of this week's podcast that you created for us?
You know what? I would actually have to look that up.
What did you have for breakfast this morning?
I had a hard-boiled egg.
Okay, so that you remember.
I had a couple of slices of prosciutto, really nice.
Oh.
And I had some watermelon.
Okay, so that's a good sign. So your short-term memory is actually pretty good. But I think
you know what it is? For the next couple of podcasts, I've kind of got a few things already recorded on the back burner since this is so new to me that, Dr. Hoffman, you and I have done lectures and seminars and all this. I'm very comfortable in front of a crowd of people, but sitting here at my desk and talking to a microphone has proved a bit challenging.
Yeah. No,
I had to do a few takes.
It is because, there's no feedback. It's like having a conversation with an inanimate object, and it really requires a different level of skill. Because when you talk to an audience, at least you look in their eyes and you see them, and you could see either their appreciation or their laughter, and it encourages you, and you think you're on the right track. But you have no way of knowing whether you're completely going off the rails when you do a podcast.
No feedback, and it's just me, and I feel like I have to fill the space.
Yeah.
It's a very, very different. And I said to myself at one point, I said, "Gee, I better start doing this in front of people so I could do it better."
Well, but here's the thing, and this is something very early. Let me just share with you that near 30 years ago, when I first got into the medical field, and I first had to give my mini lectures. It might be like a dozen or 20 people, coming to the old Hoffman Center, and basically sitting around what was like a living room in a brownstone here in New York City. Mm-hmm. I was absolutely petrified. Now you're way beyond that because you speak to big audiences, and we've done videos. By the way, our video is now, you can preview our video at drhoffman.com. The latest one is on food cravings and how to overcome food cravings. But So then I went, you know, I started radio, and I found radio was difficult because all you do is you have like these goofy guys in the control room, and they're kind of zoning out. You know, maybe they might be eating a Big Mac or something while you're broadcasting. Uh-huh. They work the controls or like sipping on a soda, and so you have no idea how anybody's reacting to what you're saying. So I actually had a friend who is. She's actually somebody who helps people overcome speaking phobias. That was her. Mm. She's a psychologist, and that was her subspecialty. And I spent a couple of sessions with her, and she said, "What you got to do is just visualize. Try to visualize the people out there, and speak to them. And you know that there are people out there because so many likes." And, you know, so many people reached on Facebook. This is a way of realizing that there are actually people who are up for that information. And so, pick like representative.
That's a good exercise for me to practice.
Yeah, rather than speaking into a microphone or recording device, you're actually speaking to people. And that's what I try to keep in mind is that, you know, there are people out there who are receptive to this. So let me just remind you that your last podcast, Layla weighs in on anxiety and depression. Why is anxiety depression so prevalent? The role in environmental toxins and GMOs, prescription medications, and food allergies are the subject of your last podcast, which was posted last Friday. So, I'm sure you're already,
I'm so glad your memory's better than mine.
No. You know what it is? I think what you're doing, you're just like purging your memory banks because, you know, when you do so much stuff and you read so much stuff, you got to kind of flush your brain. So, you know, people say, what did you do your podcast on last week? And I kind of go, let me look it up. Yeah.
That's not important enough to encode into my short-term memory anymore. Next. delete.
Exactly.
Erase, delete.
Exactly.
Thing. Exactly.
What you do with your computer. Okay, so let's...
I really have a brand new respect because when you brought this idea to my attention about doing my own podcast, I'm like, piece of cake. Whoa! It's just a very, very, very different dynamic. But again, I thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for posting it on your Facebook, and I hope people continue to enjoy it.
And you're a quick study, so we're judging by the reaction, they're already very popular. So they'll only grow.
Yay.
So great. So this week, any big stories? Let me see on the story list and some issues that I'm going to take up. On this weekend's broadcast and in future podcasts, Nina Teicholz. Nina Teicholz is the author of a recent book on how we went wrong with our dietary advice to Americans, and she's a great writer and she's a great investigative journalist. And recently, she wrote a letter to the British Medical Journal, which is a very detailed letter which criticizes. The way that we have rushed headlong into dietary guidelines, which not only are not science-based, but also are somewhat politically motivated and economically motivated by lobbying.
And the dietary guidelines are due this fall.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway, so it actually prompted... some more extensive reporting, and we're going to get her back on the air next month to talk a little bit about how we got into low-fat mania and how we demonized saturated fat and cholesterol without really adequate scientific evidence that this is the right diet for all Americans. And, by the way, there's some of our listeners who are out there on a very low-fat, low-cholesterol, or vegan diet, and they're thriving and they're doing fine. And I say more power to you if this works with your metabolism and you're doing well. I'm not saying that there's one way to go from a dietary standpoint. However, conversely, if you tell everyone that they should eat just, vegetables and cut out fats and animal products, we really have to challenge the scientific basis for believing that and look at the evidence objectively. And I personally, turn things around for myself. I was a vegan for 17 years, didn't touch any animal protein, was on a very low-fat diet, made the change to an omnivorous salad and salmon diet, where I now consume organic animal protein, eggs. I stay away from dairy and wheat because of allergies. And, you know, it's been most helpful for me, and it agrees with my metabolism. So anyway, so, and for many of our, many of our patients, we find that's the case. So that's in the news. What else is in the news?
Besides the Pope?
The Pope, okay. here's an interesting thing. They put the Pope on a diet. You know, the Pope is...
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Pope is Argentine, but, you know, you hang out long enough at the Vatican, and you kind of adopt Italian eating habits. And the Pope is, he really kind of walks the talk. He really is like in the spirit of, ascetic popes in the past. I mean, there have been popes in the past who've been like absolutely total hedonists and gourmands. They have, you know, ordered up, just incredible banquets. You know, historically, if you look at some of the popes in the time of the Medicis, they were very corrupt. They were very voluptuous in their lifestyles. This pope is more ascetic, and yet his doctor has advised him that he's got to cut the pasta. In one of his favorite dishes, you know, daily he was going to have like a serving. And I said, no pasta for you.
You know what? The Pope needs to go back to Argentinian steak.
Okay.
There was a wonderful Argentinian steak restaurant in my neighborhood, and it's gone, and I miss it terribly.
Yeah.
A nice piece of skirt steak, medium rare, with chimichurri.
They have really a lot of grass-fed beef there, because they have a huge pampas, which is these plains where, you know, they have these Argentinian cowboys who, instead of using lassos, they use bolas, right, to kind of lasso and restrain the cattle and drive them. And they have these big gaucho hats. And that's, the Argentine tradition. Maybe there's, more to it. Look, probably what the Pope eats is kind of classified, and he's not a chow hound for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But he was probably getting a little insulin resistant, maybe putting on a little extra weight. And his personal physician said, hey, you got, and the other thing he said is, you got to do some exercise. Right?
Mm.
You know, it's like issuing all those encyclicals, that's hard work, but it's not aerobic enough, so you got to, take a little walk around the Vatican, and, even the Pope is subject to the mortal constraints and needs to, trim down and get a little more fit if he wants to. Experience vitality and longevity. He's no youngster. He's, 79 or something? But, you got to be in training for these kind of, these New York weekends are pretty grueling.
That's true.
New York, Philadelphia, Washington. I get tired just thinking about it. All right. Let's proceed to questions. What's going on this week?
Yeah. We've got a question. We've got an email from Karen, and she writes, I wonder what Dr. Hoffman would think of this article. And this is an article from Mind Body Green, which you've written for yourself, Dr. Hoffman.
Yep.
That the article is anxiety and depression might be autoimmune.
Mm-hmm.
And what to do about it. And this is an article written by a Dr. William Cole, and he talks about the rise of autoimmune brain problems, and that new research is looking at how inflammation can damage the brain, and particularly in autoimmune conditions, that there are more inflammatory cytokines that are acting on the central nervous system, and this may be a cause of depression.
I love this article. I think that this is a great article. Mind Body Green is sort of a forum for all kinds of articles. Some, I think, of lesser quality, and some of really top quality. So it's kind of like let a thousand flowers bloom, and not everything there I agree with, but this one is really a great article. And so let's look at some of the points being made there. It is said that depression may be an autoimmune disease. Well, let's look at some autoimmune diseases. For example, multiple sclerosis. Multiple sclerosis is an autoimmune disease that primarily affects the brain and central nervous system. And clearly, there is a concomitant depression that is associated with multiple sclerosis. It's very well known to neurologists, and we know that that's the case. Also, I know from working with patients who have autoimmune or inflammatory disorders like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis. I mean, there is a considerable psychiatric literature
Hashimoto's.
That shows Hashimoto's disease, the thyroid, that shows that autoimmunity affects mood in a profound way. And not just because you have low thyroid hormone, but because literally there may be some brain inflammation. And if your brain is a little bit, you know, you're not, it doesn't mean you you have encephalitis or some dread, you know, catastrophic disease, but that low-grade inflammation affects energy production in the brain and neurotransmission, alters the neurotransmitters, and may be a part and parcel of depression. The other line of evidence that's very interesting is that anti-inflammatory nutrients like fish oil and curcumin has been shown in trials to be as effective as some antidepressant medications. It's quite fascinating. And then, of course, there's our experience. Our experience is that when you take people off of foods that they are allergic to, and that, you know, big culprit could be gluten, but it could be any other food that you take, they have the brain fog lifts. It really enhances mental clarity and focus. And part of depression is just sort of, instead of your brain being a, 100-watt light bulb, it's a, it's a 40-watt light bulb. It's just not enough energy production in the brain. So, absolutely, I think that there is a reason to believe that there's something to this. And so go to MindBodyGreen, and I think that's the website. Mm-hmm. And actually, the one I have here is feelguide.com. If you follow me on Facebook, you'll see me. So I might post on this. New research discovers that depression is an allergic reaction to inflammation. Well, all right, so let's qualify that. So one person on my, look, one of the things about Facebook is that people can kind of push back or even troll on you when you say something, And so I got a little bit of a trolly comment saying, that's another half-baked theory about depression. Let me tell you that when I had my depression, we tried all kinds of psychiatric drugs until we found the right one, and that changed my life. And, I say, hey, great, good for you.
That's wonderful that it changed your life.
Yeah.
But
we do see so many cases of incomplete or absent response to antidepressant drugs. I mean, we see it all the time in our practice, but clearly antidepressant drugs only work part of the time, that we really need to look at alternative techniques or techniques to boost the efficacy of antidepressant drugs, which may only work partially to alleviate depression and fatigue. Mm-hmm. So, there is a huge role, and this is not to negate the role of antidepressant medication, which, sometimes works, sometimes backfires, sometimes terrible side effects, not worth it. But, at the very least, in a complementary way, adjunctively with conventional psychiatry, or sometimes in lieu of conventional psychiatry, because the medicines are unwarranted.
Well, when I talked about SSRIs or antidepressant medications on my podcast, I was talking a lot about the side effects, and the primary side effects of antidepressants are anxiety, irritability, and insomnia. It's almost like we're trading one problem for another.
Mm-hmm.
But, you also have to look at, what the person is eating, and if they're on a poor diet, they're probably deficient in certain micronutrients, like the B vitamins, particularly B6. They're going to need more P5P or B6 to make more serotonin.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to need more omega-3s and omega-6s. They may even need a little more zinc. They're going to need these micronutrients in order to boost their serotonin. Tryptophan, 5-HTP, NAC, N-acetylcysteine is wonderful.
Especially for obsessive disorders, for people, there's actually some studies that show that obsessive gambling can be treated with N-acetylcysteine. One form of depression is excessive rumination and obsessive behaviors. You can sort of stop that vicious cycle sometimes with N-acetylcysteine. Why? It's not clear. It's an antioxidant, but maybe...
You know what, Dr. Hoffman?
Yeah.
I think that the N-acetylcysteine helps to boost GABA, and I wonder if it's the cysteine itself.
Okay.
Possibly.
And then there's
NAC
even...
NAC can boost GABA.
And then there's pharma GABA, which is a form of oral GABA, which actually some people have said, no, that's not going to be absorbed properly. But studies do show that GABA levels are raised and that people obtain better focus and concentration with GABA. And to some extent, it's a relaxing neurotransmitter. So, you know, there's look, I'm not going to oversell this because it's there. You know, there's some people who may respond well to or need pharmacological drugs. Often there are side effects. Sometimes the side effects are warranted. Sometimes people prefer not to use the medications because, in particular, a really common side effect for men and but particularly women is complete absence of libido on these medications.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's like great. Okay, you know, you get some degree of reduction of anxiety and peace of mind, but the flip side of it is you become sort of psychically numb. And lose, you know, any kind of sexual interest. So for some people, they'd rather experience the you know, ups and downs of mood fluctuation than lose their entire emotional range. You know, it's kind of like these medications are kind of like Botox for the brain, you know, in some ways. You know, and they you know, the bit of a chemical straitjacket.
It.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Wow.
All right. So anyway, so that's my take on it. I think it's a good article. It's, you know, I encourage all our listeners to find that article. Like me on Facebook, and you know, you'll see a compendium of articles that I put up there. And it's a good one. I may talk about that to a greater extent this weekend.
Yeah. Karen, thank you for sending us that article. Okay. We have another question from Kevin. I moved into a new home, and I haven't been feeling good, and my hair is falling out. We had the air tested for mold, and it came back negative. Can you help me figure this out? Boy, this is a consult.
Right. Well, why is it that this person believes that their house is responsible for their hair loss? That's the first question. I mean, but that isn't, that's kind of a, you know, I guess that's a remote possibility.
The stress of moving can make you shed a little hair.
Yeah.
Now, this is from someone named Kevin, so I wonder what age he is and if there's male pattern baldness starting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how old he is or anything. I don't know. But some of the things, I guess, to look for, if you're shedding hair, one thing comes to mind is anemia, or if it's not overt anemia, low ferritin levels.
Particularly in women, who are a little more likely to have low ferritin because of their lesser absorption of iron from food, they have less stomach acid, but also they have, you know, premenstrually or premenopausally, they have bleeding. So the vast majority of women under the age of 50 have insufficient ferritin for optimal hair growth.
Yeah. Other reasons for hair shedding. Other micronutrient deficiencies, you know, you have to see, are your nails also weak and brittle, all of that? Maybe you need additional nutrients. Biotin is helpful. Biocil is helpful.
That's a silica, organic silica,
like
right?
Borage oil,
right.
yeah.
Lack of essential fatty acids can cause, I mean, we know from veterinary medicine that if you have an animal with the mange and they're shedding, is if you give them essential fatty acids, and their vets know this, and these are really popular among pet owners, you give them essential fatty acids from cod liver oil or flax oil, that the coat will be more luxuriant.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I gotta say that we really should not completely fall into the mistake of believing in the miracle grow theory of hair, that there are always, invariably, supplements that you can get at the health food store that will make your hair sprout luxuriantly like a chia pet. You know, that isn't always the case. And sometimes it's not nutritional. It could be hormonal. It could be that programmed baldness, you know, which to some people are genetically programmed towards baldness. Sometimes it's, you know, excess androgens in women, you know, which...
Excess cortisol.
Excess stress.
Hormonal.
Yep.
Cortisol
stress.
Can cause hair thinning, skin thinning, bone thinning.
Yep. So, really...
I'd say the way all the way to the other end of the spectrum would be alopecia areata or something.
Which is an autoimmune condition,
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, yeah. that has to be explored too. And, you know, I don't think we've licked the problem of hair loss, but I think that a lot of progress is being made because, hey, this is like, you know, after, you know, we invented erectile dysfunction drugs, I think, and we're working on the ultimate diet pill, I think the next frontier for the pharmaceutical industry is to develop an amazing, safe and effective pill for hair growth or some treatment for hair restoration that isn't going to involve, you know, putting in hair plugs or things like that, that,
right.
you know, painful right. and, you know, it's not even cosmetically perfect.
Hesha Wu comes to mind.
Yeah. That's a Chinese hair. Herb, right.
And it's just basically a good body tonic overall and for vitality, but Hesha Wu, which are Chinese herbs, can be very helpful for hair strength and hair growth. And, yeah, that might be something. But I would first suggest that Kevin get a workup.
Right. And, correlation's not causation, and just because his hair started falling out when he moved doesn't necessarily mean, per se, that the house is responsible for his hair loss. I mean, you know, we could be, there are ways to check for environmental toxicity in a home. I use a website called myhealthyhome.info. The domain name is not .com, it's not .net. It's .info, myhealthyhome.info, and they have a very extensive program of testing. So if you suspect that your home is a sick building syndrome, where there's either chemicals or there's mold, and by the way, let me just share with you that I have seen patients from time to time where their problems are attributable to mold in the home or some sort of recent painting or carpet installation. That's a very real problem. And recently I even had a relative, and he's not, you know, he's one of these young millennial kids, and he's like very athletic, and he just doesn't worry too much about his health. And he bought a fixer-upper house. He's in his 20s, and he's very handy, and he bought a fixer-upper house. And all of a sudden he became like sick and weak and just felt horrible, had no idea what was going on. Finally had his home tested because he noticed some black mold. He had Stachybotrys mold growing all over that house, and he had to have it totally...
he needed a complete mold abatement.
Yeah, mold abatement. Yeah. People came in, fixed it up, and it's only months later now that his symptoms are abating, you know, because he was really hammered with this. This is a healthy young 20-something, and it's a very real problem. Did he lose his hair? No, he still got hair.
Well, that's good.
At least he's got hair. Okay, so this concludes part one of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. And Layla, share with us what we're going to be hearing about in part two.
What about soy isoflavones for prostate health?
Okay, we'll tackle that question in part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin.